Welcome to Dismantling Injustice, the podcast of the Envision Freedom Fund. I'm Julie Menti, Envision's Communications Manager, filling in as host for our Executive Director, Carl Hammond Lipscomb. The inhumanity of immigration detention is happening right here in New York. Immigrants are being held in county jails where they're forced to contend with inadequate medical and mental health care, racism, inedible food, indignity, and abuse. Not to mention retaliatory behavior from jail officials, including isolation or even transfers. And this is happening right in our own backyard at the Orange County Correctional Facility in Goshen, New York, a mere 90-minute drive from New York City. Sama Cisse, a staff attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights, specializes in international human rights and challenging inhumane immigration policies and abusive police practices. Sama joins us on Dismantling Injustice to talk about what's happening in Orange County, how detained immigrants are organizing and advocating for themselves, and how New York can once and for all get out of the business of immigration detention. Stay tuned for a great conversation, and we'll be right back with attorney Sama Cisse.
Over the last 8 years, Envision Freedom Fund has paid more than $14 million to free close to 6,000 individuals from pretrial jailing or immigration detention. Thank you to all of our donors who help us to pay the too high price for freedom. We know that paying bond will never be enough on its own to end the humanitarian crisis of incarceration and the surveillance of Black, Brown, and immigrant communities. That's why we also fight to dismantle the systems that harm our communities in the first place. If this sounds like the transformative change that you believe in, you can join us. Visit our website, envisionfreedom.org, or click the link right on our Spotify profile to donate to Envision Freedom Fund. Because freedom for all people will take all of us.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. I am joined, as promised, by Sama Cisse. And we're really excited to be talking about immigration detention, particularly in New York State. Before we sort of get into any of the details, Sama, can you tell us a little bit about the work you do at the Center for Constitutional Rights and what brought you to this work?
Yes, thank you so much for having me today, for thinking of me for this conversation that I think is so incredibly important. So I came to really focus my work around immigration issues in the United States on detention through honestly just representing people first in law school. And then after I graduated, I was an immigration defense attorney for a few years after law school before I came to the Center for Constitutional Rights. So I guess that's how I came to the work. But I guess how I came to the issue really is just my own lived experience. Of my family, you know, being immigrants who survived the Civil War, came to the United States, and growing up Black and immigrant in Richmond, Virginia in the South, dealing with the multitude of that, right? The different forms of oppression and really trying to navigate that sphere. So my family specifically did deal with the immigration detention system, but we knew people who did, we knew people who were displaced, we knew people who had a lot of immigration issues. And that was always just a part of our lives. It was something that family members were always navigating, either as refugees, asylees, green card holders who were afraid that they would lose their green card, et cetera. And so I had always known about the injustice of the U.S. immigration system and how it functions, the racism within the system, and its focus on keeping people out. But it was really through practice and through organizing with a lot of folks who were doing court support work for people in New York who were facing mass deportation that I really got to know the in and out of the system and really become familiar with it and decided that focusing on the issue of detention was what was most pressing and is most pressing right now.
Yeah. Well, we're certainly lucky to have you in this fight, you know, where personal becomes professional and vice versa in many ways. And it's interesting to hear you, you know, are coming to this as having grown up in Virginia. And I think that sort of introduces the idea that when a lot of people hear about immigration detention or immigration issues, they only think about what happens at the border. And in fact, these issues are happening in every state across the country, including here in New York. It's not just a red state issue or a blue state issue. It's an every state issue. It's the whole country. And particularly, I think, when it comes to detention, that people think that it's not happening here. And it is. For example, I think the closest immigration detention center in New York State right now to New York City is the Orange County Correctional Facility, which is in Goshen, New York, which is not far at all. Can you talk a little bit about what that facility is, where it is, why immigrants are being jailed there?
Yes, I think it's so important when we talk about immigration in the U.S. to really get the whole scope of it and how it exists and how it functions. And so, yes, you know, I think it's very important to focus on the border and all of the abuses that occur there daily. But as you were saying, these issues happen all across the country, right? And so here in New York, people oftentimes are surprised when I say there are detention centers, or as I call them, immigration jails in New York State. And that's partially because the state actually did take action to get rid of for-profit immigration facilities a few years ago. So all of the immigration detention that occurs in New York State actually happens through ICE contracts with local jails, where local jails are essentially giving beds to ICE and being paid for it in order to hold immigrants who are facing deportation. And it's a really messed up system where New York State is profiting off immigrants, off the cruelty that is done to immigrants while they're in immigration jails. So actually, it's really interesting. I like to say I've had a vendetta against Orange County Jail for a very long time, because it was the first client I ever had who was facing deportation was detained there. And so as a law student, I remember no one else drove in the group that I was working with. But I drove, you know, growing up in Virginia. Again, I had a license for a long time. So I was responsible for driving us from New York City to Goshen to see our client who was detained at Orange County Jail. And I used to hate those drives. It's beautiful, you know, obviously the landscape, but knowing where you're going, knowing that person is behind bars. The client who I was representing at the time was a Black African immigrant who had a criminal conviction from 10 years prior that ICE had picked her up later about. And she had young children who were U.S. citizen children. And it just was like watching her whole family fall apart while she was sitting in immigration jail for what they said had to be 6 months in order for her to get a review for release because of the type of conviction that she had. So she actually served no time for her criminal conviction. She had probation, but she had to serve time, 6 months, for a civil immigration infraction, even though she's married to a U.S. citizen, had U.S. citizen children, and could obviously have a clear path to getting status in the United States. So I remember those drives. It's a jail, right? Orange County Jail is a jail. And they have a certain section that they section off for immigrants. But I, as someone who does work both in the immigration and the criminal legal space, I've visited many jails before, I've done many jail visits. And I don't think it's about comparison, because I think a jail is a jail and people are facing excruciating circumstances, no matter whether they're there for immigration or criminal offenses. But I have visited many people who I hold dear in jails facing criminal charges, and I've been able to like touch them, and we sat across the table from each other and talked. And the first thing I remember is when we went to visit my client who was being held in immigration detention at OCJ, Orange County Jail, was we were behind like a glass and she was shackled the whole time. And it was just like very dehumanizing experience. So dehumanizing that for the whole 6 months, she wouldn't allow her children to come visit her because they couldn't touch her or anything like that. And I just remember all the stories she would tell me about, you know, people would literally just be crying and screaming because that's another factor of immigration detentions. It's can be indefinite detention. You don't know how long you're going to be in jail, depending on how long your case lasts, depending on, you know, the type, the reason that you're there. And, you know, she would say to me, at least with when I was facing criminal charges, I knew exactly the time I would be facing, but I'm just here and I don't know like when I'm going to leave. And that sort of like torture of that indeterminate time period of being confined and being away from her family was really hard.
Yeah. I mean, this is just sort of the classic example of where the criminal system and the immigration system intersect, both in the facilities that they're using to jail people and in the reasons that they are holding people. So what was a minor criminal charge that did not result in any sort of incarceration rose to the level of her being detained. And that's just the way the systems feed into each other and, you know, just really torture people. And, you know, I've driven upstate many times and people say, oh, this town is so cute. And I said, you know, there's a jail here. And everyone's like, oh, you know, buzzkill in the car. And I'm like, well, it's happening right here. There's a jail here. There's an immigration detention wing to that jail. This is happening here. And, you know, we have a hotline that folks in detention can call. And we get a lot of calls almost every day from folks who are at Orange County and Goshen, New York. And they have been raising the alarm for a long time about the conditions there. We've heard about inedible food, lack of medical care and mental health services, racism, retaliatory behavior from people who work at the jail, when people do report things that are unacceptable. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you hear from folks who are on the inside and how they're organizing and advocating for themselves against these conditions?
Yes, I think the first thing that I always hear from people who are being detained by immigration at various jails, but specifically OCJ, is the power of other people helping them, right? Like the collectiveness of, you know, if they don't have commissary money, if they are not able to get access to certain things, it's the people who they are detained with who are there for them, who are helping them. If they're not able to contact certain family members for whatever reason, those people would reach out to their families and things like that. So I think there is a system of people relying on each other when they are detained. And I think that is what leads to the organizing, right? When people realize that they're in similar situations, when they start to talk to each other, maybe even trust each other a little bit, they can start to see that they have a common goal, which is to really get at the heart of the abusive treatment that they go through. So in terms of the treatment, I mean, the guards, there's so many complaints about how the correction officers, the guards, treat immigrants, right? From really racist things that they'll say to them, to, you know, specifically targeting certain individuals who they know don't speak English, as well as others. And there have been several instances where people have organized at OCJ, whether it's through hunger strikes or through letter writing or through filing complaints with the regional ICE office against Orange County Jail, where they have faced retaliation from guards, specifically oftentimes being either pepper sprayed, put in solitary confinement, losing access to communicating with their attorneys and their loved ones. And so it's all of those things, right? And people are expected while they're detained to then fight their immigration case while they're dealing with all of these things. And they don't have access to the same resources they would have if they were, let's say, at home, being able to work, being able to have access to certain documents, to visit their lawyers more regularly than they're able to while they're detained. So it inherently creates a barrier to people winning their immigration cases as well, because they're dealing with so much while they're detained, and yet they're still expected to build the case. And of course, as most people may know, folks who are detained are not even guaranteed attorneys. New York State is a little better. We do have the Universal Rep program, but even within that program, there are people who fall through the cracks sometimes, right? And so there's just all of that is to say there's just so much that's against people once they're detained that it's not even surprising that so many people end up losing their case, right? The argument the government likes to make is like, oh, they never had a case to begin. It's like, no, you created situations where it would be almost impossible for them to fight their case and to win. And this actually reminded me of something I remember a client told me was like, the entire purpose of immigration detention is to break your spirit, right? That's what he told me. We, CCR and Immigrant Defense Project, 2 years ago, we did a report called Cruel by Design, where we talked about immigration detention during the COVID, the height of COVID, and when things were locked down. And people were sharing, different people were sharing their experiences when they were detained during that time period. And I remember he said that. He said, the entire purpose of the system is to break my spirit, right? And I think if the objective of the U.S. government is to get not as many people to stay here, to become part of our communities, then that makes sense as to why immigration detention is growing the way that it's growing, right? Because it's a system of punishment, even though the narrative that's pushed is civil detention, it's not criminal, it's not punishment. For the people who experience it, it's very much punishment. There are also so many stories of people not having access to adequate medical care. I think that's maybe like the number one thing I hear a lot about, because that's oftentimes when people are desperate and they reach out trying to see if they can get any help, whether it's medication or things that they need that they're not able to access, or if they are harmed in some way, not being able to go to a doctor and see someone. And I think what's particularly terrible about that for Orange County is that they're making money off detaining people, and then they're not using any of that money to actually help. Right, because there's not really a requirement for them to do it. There's obviously like the ICE detention standards and things like that, but they don't really follow them, and it's not really implemented. So you have the situation where you have this county that's making money to keep people in cages and then not even taking care of them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you talked about the height of COVID, and you know, I remember speaking with one of our members after they had been released, after we'd paid their bond, you know, once a vaccine was available, you know, their experience of getting the vaccine while in detention required them to spend the entire day in shackles because the vaccines were not being given at Orange County. They were being given someplace else. And as a result, they spent the entire day in shackles waiting for their turn to get this shot to help save their life in conditions where they were much more likely to get sick. So yeah, I mean, it is almost as if by design, the system is set up to make people suffer, you know? So when we hear about folks who are speaking up, who are going on hunger strike, on top of everything else that they're experiencing personally or with their families, they're doing so at great personal risk. You know, you mentioned retaliatory behavior from the guards who may single out people who they know to have spoken out. The Center for Constitutional Rights and the New York Civil Liberties Union and Bronx Defenders filed a federal lawsuit against Orange County, ICE, and the jail county officials on behalf of immigrants who have been detained there. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that lawsuit is about, where it stands?
So CCR, Bronx Defenders, and the New York Civil Liberties Union did sue Orange County Jail. We filed the lawsuit in April of this year, and it talks about things that happened starting in 2021. So, you know, individuals at Orange County Jail have been for a long time talking about the horrible conditions at the jail. But in 2021, there were mass protests, partially related to COVID, but partially related to just conditions generally in terms of food, and then also treatment from specific guards. And so there were sustained protests, hunger strikes, engagement with city council members, other elected officials, letter writing, a civil rights and civil liberties complaint that individuals submitted around mistreatment related to both inability to access medical care and then all the other abuses that I talked about, including retaliation for hunger striking. And so all of these actions led to what we would say a mass transfer of individuals from Orange County Jail to Southern Detention Centers. And that happened in July. So a lot of the actions happened at the beginning of 2021. And then in July 2021, a lot of folks were mass transferred. And so we spoke to a lot of the people who were transferred. I guess I should go back. When I say mass transferred, people were transferred both to the South, but also internally within OCJ to what we would call a punitive unit, segregation unit. And so we talked to people, both people who were internally transferred and people who were transferred out of the state, about their experiences and what happened. And all of it point to retaliatory behavior, which is unconstitutional, right? Because this is all these actions that the immigrants who were detained at Orange County Jail were taking are protected under the First Amendment, right? They're all speech actions. And so we really focused on that, and we were able to get a few individuals who said that they wanted to sue the jail and ICE around what had happened, because a lot of them, you know, were not able during this time period to have access to their attorneys, and they think that also impacted their cases. And also just the treatment and the targeting that happened from the guard. So the reason why we sued ICE and not just Orange County Jail officials is because ICE officials were there as well when all of this were happening. In fact, they were meeting with people who were hunger striking or engaged in other First Amendment speech and telling them, oh, we'll make things better. We'll consider you for parole, you know, like just quiet things down, you know, things will get better, things like that. And of course, things did not get better. And so that's what the lawsuit focuses on. It focuses on our clients, their stories, two individuals who were transferred to Louisiana, and then three others who were internally transferred within OCJ, one who was recently released from Orange County Jail and is no longer detained, and their activism, their organizing at Orange County Jail, and the retaliation they faced. A second part of the lawsuit also focuses really heavily on ICE, like HQ headquarters, and their role in ensuring that these detention standards are actually upheld, because you know, they don't. They don't, and oftentimes the jails are allowed to do whatever they want. And so we sued them, basically saying that they have rules and policies in place. They didn't follow these rules and policies, and because of that, harm was caused to our clients, right? And so just really focusing on putting a lot of the responsibility on ICE and not just the Orange County Jail officials, because there is a responsibility that ICE has if they are going to enter contracts with local jails to detain immigrants, to ensure that the way that they're treated while they're detained meets whatever it is. Federal standards are set. And so the litigation is still ongoing. We filed, like I said, in April. We heard back from the government, the federal government filed what's called a motion to dismiss, which is essentially saying they're denying accountability for all of the things we said in our complaint against them. And then the county, surprisingly, filed what's called an answer, which is similar. They're denying a lot of things, but what's really important about the type of thing that they submitted is that it means we actually get to enter discovery with them, which means we get to request certain documents and interview certain county officials, which we think is really important to try and figure out exactly what's happening during that time and what happened to our clients. Another really important part of this case is that while CCR, NYCLU, and Bronx Defenders are legal organizations who brought this litigation, we did it in partnership with a growing movement here in New York to end immigration detention. So there is a coalition of folks who have presented a legislation called Dignity Not Detention at the to the state legislature, and it's pending. And so a huge part of the litigation is obviously for our plaintiffs and to support them and to ensure that our clients' rights are actually protected, but also working with the coalition to think about how litigation can be a tool as they are doing various forms of organizing, as they are talking to elected officials, to show them, you know, here is information from this lawsuit about what is happening at this jail, and really to be able to explain why it can no longer operate, right? ICE is aware of the things that are happening at Orange County Jail, and they continue to allow it to happen. They continue to try and renew a contract with them every year. And so it's up to us in New York to say that's not okay, and that we don't want this contract to exist anymore, and that there are other ways that people can be in the community and fight their immigration cases.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, when we've been lobbying for Dignity Not Detention in Albany, being able to point to this lawsuit and the details in this lawsuit, you know, and we can link to information about it in our show notes, you know, was really persuasive to people. It brought, I think, a lot of gravitas to the situation and, you know, and a lot of validation, you know, having your organization behind it and others, you know, unfortunately needed that sort of validation to make progress, you know, in Albany to really get traction. You know, it's unfortunate that it's not enough just for folks to say, this is happening to me, this is happening to my neighbors, this can't continue. The fact that we even have to bring it as a lawsuit is shocking and disappointing, but it really is advancing the Dignity Not Detention movement. You know, one of the things that you mentioned as sort of a retaliation to the lawsuit and to people speaking up about what was happening were these transfers. And, you know, I think one of the things that we always try to make sure that we're emphasizing when we're talking about wanting to end immigration detention in New York State and ending our contracts with ICE for county jail detention is that we don't want people to be transferred. We understand that to be continuing the harm, worsening the harm, a retaliatory behavior, and that what we really need is for people to be released so that they can build their case and address their case and be in community and be with their families. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, how ICE uses transfers to sort of get around this or as a threat?
Yeah, so thank you for bringing up transfers because I think it's so important. I think oftentimes people use transfers as a mechanism of fear to push back against any efforts to either close immigration jails or to end contracts. And the reality is that ICE always transfers people, whether or not there is a fight to close the immigration detention center or to end a contract, or, you know, transfer is a tool that ICE uses all the time, and they have immense discretion to use that tool. And they use it whenever they get, you know, an idea that any organizing is happening at a specific immigration jail to break up people, they'll transfer them. If they don't want to deal with someone's medical issues, they'll transfer them. You know, they can find any reason possible to transfer people. It's a tool that they have always used, even before the growing movement to close immigration jails and to end contracts. And really what we're seeing now with these fights is they are really using it as a form of retaliation. We would say, and what we do say in our lawsuit is the way that they use it goes against even their own standards that they have, which I might say are not even that high standards. It still gives them a lot of discretion in terms of when they can transfer people, but there are still certain standards and things they are supposed to look at
when they are transferring people, and we find that they don't do that, right? It's being used purely as a way to either punish an individual or their community for speaking out against ICE, for speaking out against conditions at a detention center. And it's really, really unacceptable, right? And I think what's so powerful is the movement to say, you know, transfers are not what we need. We need releases. And I often think when people hear that, they're like, well, we don't understand what that means. And it's like, exactly, it means exactly what it is, that people should be released to fight their immigration cases. In fact, this has been the norm. The fact that there are so many immigration jails and so many people who are detained or on electronic monitoring is new. It's not something that has existed in the history of immigration, the U.S. immigration system. It's a new and growing system that we need to curb before it gets even larger. And there have been different programs that people have implemented in different communities where folks can be in community, can be held accountable through like various organizations and things like that, and still go through their immigration process. Because we know it's a lie. The lie that ICE and the government tells is that there is such an issue of people showing up to their immigration cases. We know this is a lie. Most people show up. There's always going to be issues of people not showing up. I mean, whether you're in the criminal system, the immigration system, that happens, right? So we can't say it's 100%. But most people are actually really trying to get a date in order to fight their case because they want to be here. They want to be able to have status. They want to reconnect with family or stay with family. And when they're home, they have a higher chance of doing that, of being able to work and afford a lawyer if they can't get an attorney for free or for low bono or cheap, right? To be able to work and to be able to help their family afford a good lawyer to help represent them through the immigration case, to be active participants in their case, whether it's, you know, helping put together documents, getting letters of support and things like that for them. You know, the individuals who are going through the system know their cases the best. And when they're detained, they're unable to participate and like fully advocate and help their attorneys advocate for them in the way that they can when they're released. And I would say ICE knows this. And right. That's why transfers far, far away from folks, family members, from their attorneys continue to happen. Because again, going back to what my client said, it's all about breaking people's spirits and making it so that they don't want to fight. So they don't organize on the inside, so that they don't speak out against the system and they instead just give up and you know, are deported or kept away from the people that they love here in the United States. And that's completely unacceptable. And that's why we really wanted to make sure when we brought the litigation, even though we're talking about retaliation for First Amendment speech, we really wanted to get at transfers because it's a huge issue. And the amount of discretion that ICE has afforded to use transfers as a form of retaliation is not acceptable.
Yeah. I mean, the intentional cruelty of the system, I think, has really come through in this conversation. And it almost seems unbelievable until you have the opportunity to speak to people who have experienced it firsthand. And then there's just no way to deny it. You know, and in terms of people being released, you know, we, you know, have helped over 80 people be released from detention this year by paying their bond. And those folks are working on their cases. You know, they are, as you said, like trying to do everything they can to, you know, meet their court dates, meet the expectations, meet the demands that are being put on them by the system. And they're really hard. And it takes a lot of time and it takes money and it takes legal advice that is in short supply sometimes. So people are in a really tough spot even when they are released, but they have the advantage of freedom. So for our New Yorker friends who have listened to this conversation and understand that the intentional cruelty of immigration detention in New York is something that we can end, what you know, what would you suggest that people do to support the dignity not detention or support, you know, is there anything we can do to help support the lawsuit that you have filed or to help people who are at Orange County?
Yes, I think the best thing that people can do is if you have time, if you have the energy, join the coalition. It's not just a coalition of like organizations or legal organizations by any means. Individuals can also join and be part of the effort to go to Albany, to talk to different elected officials about why the Dignity Not Detention Act needs to be passed to get rid ICE contracts, essentially, with local New York jails. And another way that people can help is there is a commissary fund, a fundraiser that we have to provide money to people who are detained because, unfortunately, like I said, in terms of food and their basic necessities are not being met. And so people have to pay to have those needs met. And so as people doing this work, we think the least that we can do is support immigrants who are in these immigration jails and let them know that we're with them, we support them, and not allow ICE in New York State to disappear them, because that's the entire dehumanizing part of detention. Is it's a form of disappearance. It's why jails are in the locations that they are. And I think through giving to commissary fundraisers or even joining the coalition, it's a way for us to be in community. Obviously, call your elected officials, your legislators, and tell them that you support Dignity Not Detention. And then I think also just, I think it can be difficult, but I think generally what we're doing in New York State is something that's happening all across the country. And the vision is not just for New York State to get out of the business of detaining immigrants, but for the United States to get out of the business of detaining immigrants. So I think just talk to people, right, about this issue. I think people don't know a lot about it. You know, there is a huge focus on the border, but just letting people know that if you, regardless of where you live, if you look not too far, there's probably a jail or immigration detention center close by. And have those discussions with people to really try and figure out if this is something that you want your city or your county or your town to really be engaged in, and start your own fight outside of what's happening in New York.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect place to end. You know, and there's a lot of different ways that people can get involved, from, you know, providing personal comfort and solidarity to people by supporting commissary fund, to paying attention to what's happening in your own community, and certainly speaking to your elected representatives to make sure that they understand that New York doesn't need to be in business with ICE. So thank you so much, Sama, for joining us and for helping us to, you know, share with our listeners what's happening here in New York and how folks can get involved to end detention here.
Thanks again for joining us. Dismantling Injustice is brought to you by Envision Freedom Fund, an organization that works to transform the immigration and criminal legal systems while meeting the critical needs of individuals impacted by these systems daily. To learn more about our work and donate, visit us at envisionfreedom.org. That's envisionfreedom.org. Dismantling Injustice was created by Sally Israel. Our executive producer is Abigail Wolf, and hosted by Carl Hammett Lipscomb. That's me. Special thanks to the team at Envision Freedom for being amazing. Until we're all free, peace out.